The following is an ATS Mix exclusive interview.
Part 2.
You know, another thing that you and I have a great passion about is the conceptual idea of transdimensional beings. Tell me a little bit about your philosophy on that.
Well, this has really become a central issue for me as I have worked with this South American sacred plants called ayahuasca, which have enabled me to experience directly the reality of other dimensions and of beings that inhabit them. Now, I'm prepared to accept that that's not what they are, but that is how I have experienced them and how many, many other people I know who've worked with this mysterious shamanistic brew have experienced them, that we live in a multidimensional universe, that all around us, all the time, a much wider reality than we are able to see interpenetrates our own.
Right.
That in the normal, alert, problem-solving state of consciousness of everyday life, we just cannot know or experience or see those other dimensions. And quantum physicists are trying to build gigantic machines in order to break into parallel dimensions, like the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, Switzerland, the largest scientific instrument of the planet, billions of dollars worth of investment, primarily to find out whether we can get into these other dimensions that quantum physicists already are convinced exist. And what I've come to realize is it's probably a whole lot simpler than that. We have the instrument inside our heads right now.
Right.
It's called our brains. And what we have to do is to adjust our state of consciousness, just as I mentioned earlier, just as you would retune a TV set to pick up a different signal. All those other signals are out there broadcasting, but in order to gain access to them, we have to change our level and state of consciousness. And shamans in traditional cultures all around the world are the masters of the technology to do that. And it's a psychic technology, a technology of altering consciousness. Can be done with powerful hallucinogenic plants, can also be done with certain kinds of music, with rhythmic dancing, with fasting. There are all kinds of different techniques that shamans have developed to change the receiver wavelength of the brain,
right,
and allow us to make contact with other realities. And I think this is one area where Western civilization really needs to sit at the feet of traditional cultures and learn from them. Because as the late, great Terence McKenna said, the shamans of tribal and hunter-gatherer cultures around the world have kept the flame of a tremendous mystery burning, while our society persists in believing that there is no mystery. This is one of, to my mind, one of the worst things about the dominance of science in Western civilization. Science is a brilliant thing. It's a wonderful system for manipulating and exploring the physical realm. But right, if by chance there is more to reality than the physical world, science is not the right instrument for exploring it. And the techniques of shamanism developed over thousands of years, I believe, are the right instrument. And I've been trying to learn from those techniques,
right,
over the last several years. And I've had some extraordinary experiences that have changed my view of reality and changed my outlook on my own life as well.
Well, there is something that has always kind of perplexed me as I want to try to move into a biblical area, if you don't mind. In the Bible, supposedly the Israelites, while they were wandering in the desert for all those many 40 years, the only form of sustenance that they had was supposedly this stuff called manna, or orme, I believe as the Hebrew call it, or translated, what is it? Have you ever been able to decide what this substance is? Does it exist today? Could it possibly be this monatomic white gold that we hear about?
You know, I don't really have a strong view on manna. When the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness of Sinai after the departure from Egypt, some very extraordinary things took place, or at least so we are assured in the book of Exodus and
right,
other books of the Old Testament that cover this period. Where I developed an interest in this period specifically concerns the Ark of the Covenant. I've written
right,
a whole book about the Ark of the Covenant, the sign and the seal. And I had to explore the early origins of the Ark of the Covenant. And I do trace those origins back, although I accept that some Christian listeners might not agree with me on this. I do trace those origins back to ancient Egypt and to the high magic and science of ancient Egypt. And the reason I trace them back there is to do with the figure of Moses. Moses led the Israelites through Sinai, but Moses was also brought up in the household of the Pharaoh and groomed to be a future Pharaoh himself. This means that he would have been given access to the secrets of all of the ancient magic and wisdom of Egypt. I think those secrets explain the extraordinary powers of the Ark of the Covenant and its ability to right. strike people dead with bolts of fiery energy. And I suggest that that knowledge rooted in the past of ancient Egypt also explains the mystery of mana, that we are dealing with a kind of lost technology here.
Okay, I'm going to we're going to kind of intermingle some questions from the AboveTopSecret.com membership in addition to our own things, just kind of get some member questions in here. And this one, Graham, is from a member by the name of Space Visitor, who has seen your video, The Secret of the Pyramids, and he says he was very, very impressed with it and was really enthralled with it. His question basically deals with the curse of the Pharaoh. Space Visitor says that the poison taken from the hair spines of whatever the cactus name is. Poison lasts for 1,000 years. The pharaohs knew their graves would be robbed. They put their hairs on their body wraps, et cetera, et cetera. His question is there any way to authenticate, especially when you're talking about going to King Tut's tomb and all the things that have been found in the pyramids, is there anything to substantiate the curse of the pharaohs?
Well, I personally don't think that it has anything to do with a long-lasting poison. But I think we have to understand that the ancient Egyptians were a most extraordinary civilization, really very unusual. They maintained a peaceful and harmonious prosperity for more than 3,000 years. During that whole time, they devoted their best minds to exploring the mystery of life after death. The tombs that were created for deceased individuals were seen as the homes for a particular aspect of the deceased individual's soul. The soul in the ancient Egyptian system was a very complex entity, but one part of it remained in the tomb. And to desecrate the tomb was to bring down on yourself an attack effectively from this ghostly spirit of the entity buried in that tomb. This is what the ancient Egyptians believed. And they knew a whole lot more about what they were talking about in these matters than we do, because we don't devote our best minds to considering mysteries like that.
Right.
We devote our best minds to making, you know, new products to sell in the supermarket.
There is another member by the name of Luis9343 who says, you present great similarities about ET encounters and the supernatural state obtained by consuming hallucinogens. Sometimes masses of people see UFOs. So do you then contend that they all enter a hallucinatory state at the same time?
Very good question. And, of course, I do have an answer to that question.
I hope so, because we're
glad to hear
what
that.
What I'm talking about in my book is altered states of consciousness, however those altered states are produced. That an altered state of consciousness is necessary in order to see supernatural realms and beings, to have contact with them. And one of the efficient ways of getting into an altered state of consciousness is via hallucinogenic plants, as shamanic cultures have done for thousands of years. But there are other ways to get into altered states of consciousness. And magnetic fields are particularly powerful producers of altered states of consciousness. Michael Persinger at the Laurentian University in Canada is producing profound altered states of consciousness by beaming powerful electromagnetic fields at the heads of his volunteers. And the moment the field hits their brains, they start to see visions and to see small beings standing around them. And that's what I'm suggesting happens when large groups of people all see the same the same object, which is that they are all affected by an electromagnetic field, which affects their consciousness, effectively retunes their consciousness, and allows them to see that which is not normally visible. The miracle of Fatima in Portugal, right, when 70,000 people, as well as an encounter with the Virgin Mary, saw what absolutely sounds like a flying saucer,
right,
moving through the heavens. And I would suggest that all of those people were in a deeply altered state at that point. And that doesn't mean that what they were saying was not real. I'm not saying that what was seen is an illusion. I'm saying,
right,
it is real, but that it isn't normally accessible to our senses. We have to alter our state of consciousness in order to make it accessible to our senses.
Right. Well, for some 25-plus years, off and on, I have been an amateur UFO researcher, and I've gone to a number of different spots where, between photography, film, and also video cameras, I have captured some unusual things that were in the air. Now, would that still fall under the same category, or am I actually seeing a real phenomena, or is it just
my... This is where it really gets extremely interesting. The great psychologist Jung wrote a book about flying saucers, and he talked about this very mystery, the mystery of the flying saucer. It's this, that it has largely psychic characteristics, but that it appears sometimes to materialize within our dimension. He actually referred to flying saucers as materialized psychisms for this reason, that occasionally they will actually leave a trace on a camera film or on a radar screen, that people who are abducted by these beings sometimes find objects stuck under their skin which come back with them into this world.
Yeah.
I think flying saucers, the UFOs, are absolutely real. I just don't think that it's as simple as these things coming across huge distances of interstellar space to explore our planet.
Right.
I think it's much more likely to be some kind of interdimensional technology. We, on this planet, are able to explore other dimensions by altering our state of consciousness. It may be that beings in other dimensions have found a technology to actually break through physically into our realm.
Right, yeah.
And do so from time to time. But my own strong intuition is that it's a much more complicated and a much darker mystery than just beings like us who happen to be from other planets far, far away. I think there's a lot to suggest that we're looking at interdimensional contact here.
I've always considered this. You know, here we are, mere humans, and we will send out into space probes like the Surveyor to orbit the moon or to go to Mars. I've always been curious if there might be a multidimensional race or entities that are doing the same, that have found a way to be able to send their probes into our dimension, and that is perhaps what it is that we see and photograph.
That's what I'd put my money on, personally. That's what's going on here, that there's a range of technologies for jumping between dimensions. We on planet Earth have not yet developed a physical technology to do that, but we can shift our consciousness. We can project our consciousness into other dimensions, but we can't send a machine into other dimensions.
Yeah.
It may be that the inhabitants of other dimensions are able to send their machines into ours. And in fact, I go into this at great length in my book, Supernatural. And I'm also suggesting that the mysterious phenomena, the mysterious beings called fairies and elves in medieval Europe, were also interdimensional travelers, perhaps the very same interdimensional travelers, just seen through different cultural spectacles. And just as the modern so-called aliens have the flying saucer as their vehicle for jumping between realms, in the case of the fairies and elves, it was a kind of dance. They did a sort of circular dance. They were often reported as being seen dancing in a circle, and then suddenly they would disappear, completely vanish. If a human being walked up to that circle where the fairies were dancing and touched it, he would be dragged into a vortex and carried off and would disappear also. He might think that he'd been away for a day. He would return a day later. He'd find he'd been gone for 300 years. Rather like the missing time phenomenon on a much wider scale, of course, but rather like the missing time phenomenon that we have today with UFO abductees.
Wow. One of our members is also a super moderator, and his name is Moskwa. And he has an interesting question, and it kind of gets you to give a little bit more information about the shamanism area. And it says, since it is apparent much of what we consider to be the seeds of the best attributes of civilization these referring to society, medicine, knowledge, etc., can be traced back to the earliest shamanistic experiences. Do you intend to study, Graham, the traditions of the North American First Nations people as a possible future project?
Yes, very, very much so. I have given some attention to North American traditions in supernatural, but I did concentrate more, much more on South America, simply because those traditions are much more a part of current practice in South America than they are in North America. And also because I had to draw the lines in my research somewhere. You know, I also largely cut Australia out of my
right.
research. And the Aborigines of Australia have astonishing shamanistic culture and
exactly.
traditions as well. When you're writing a book and it's already a long book, you have to make choices about what you focus on. For those reasons, I didn't focus as much as I would have wished to have done on some of the extraordinary North American traditions in this area. But perhaps for the future, I will. Some of my critics accuse me of writing books that are much too long anyway, you know. So I'd like to draw the line at sort of, you know, 400 or 500 pages and not end up writing 1,000 or 2,000 pages. Because there is a vast amount of just amazing material out there. So you have to make decisions, you have to make choices,
yeah.
and, you know, then you have to do the best you can. My sense as a writer is that my obligation to my reader is to really be there, to really experience
right.
what I'm writing about, to know about it thoroughly and absolutely, to know every side of the argument, to be fully versed on all the academic work and all the alternative work that's been done on the subject as well, and then still, from direct personal experience, to come up with my own point of view. I feel that's my responsibility as an author, but it's probably not my responsibility to know about everything and to write about everything.
A member by the name of Sith Raul asked this: have you ever been tempted to undertake a more detailed study of the part of the ancient British Isles played in the preserving of forgotten knowledge or the possible relationship that they may have had with a lost civilization? The Lea Vale, or the Stone of Destiny, that lies in the hills of Tara, or Tara, in Ireland, for example, is clearly comparable with the Omphalos you detailed in Heaven's Mirror.
Yes, I think that there are many mysteries to explore in the British Isles. There is no doubt in my mind that there is a very ancient layer of culture and knowledge here, which goes back far beyond recorded history. And we need only look at the extraordinary stone circles of Britain, Stonehenge, Cullinish in Scotland, the Avebury Stone Circle, which is nearby where I am today, to see in them the remnants of a lost technology and a lost way of knowing the world. I think the problem in Britain, because it's been so plowed over and dug up and built upon over
right.
the last 2,000 years, is that much of the past has been rubbed out, unfortunately. And
yeah.
we don't have a full record anymore. I mean, there was an individual in Avebury, the stone circle near where I live, back in the 18th century, who made it his job to destroy as many of the stones as he could. He built huge fires up against them and then poured acid on them and smashed them up with pickaxes. And, you know, this kind of thing has been going on for thousands of years, whether out of greed, whether out of prejudice. And so a lot of the landscape that contains this information has been carried away, unfortunately.
How terrible.
All right, Above Top Secret member Starry has a pretty interesting question. We haven't really talked about it. She wants to know, or he, if you keep up on all the new findings that are happening on Mars. As an example, she or he wants to know about the liquid water being found on an image taken by the NASA Mars Global Surveyor. Do you think there could be life on Mars, Graham?
Yeah, I'm kind of open-minded about that. I've done a lot of research on Mars, although my main period of focus on Mars goes back to the late 1990s, and I have not been following it as closely since then as I did when I wrote a book called The Mars Mystery. The thing that most strikes me about Mars is that planet was subjected at some point, and I believe possibly quite recently, to a horrendous cataclysm, utterly horrendous, which drew a line all the way around the planet, a line of cliffs, so that one part of the planet, one half of the planet, is physically much lower than the other half. huge craters. It looks to me like it was hit by a series of gigantic asteroids. And these would have had such power and such force that they may have been capable of sterilizing all life on the planet. So I have no doubt that there was life on Mars. But whether there still is, I'm not so sure. I still remain completely open-minded to the case that my friend Richard Hoagland and others have made, that there are monuments on Mars. I think that NASA has rubbished this case in an almost suspicious way and much too quickly. Some of the photographic images that have come back from Mars are absolutely intriguing. And even though a huge disinformation campaign was put in around the subject of the so-called face on Mars, so that we were all supposed to become convinced that actually it's not a face, it's just a natural hill.
Right.
I am by no means convinced of that. And I think that even in the most unflattering photographs of that object, there are intriguing features which are very hard to explain in natural geological terms.
We have another member by the name of Undo who asked this question. Is Graham beginning to now subscribe to the idea that the fruit from the Tree of Life back in Adam and Eve's story was a psychedelic or psychotropic mushroom-type fruit?
Yes, in a word, I am beginning to subscribe to that idea. I think the origins, and I realize again that this may offend some listeners, but I think that the origins of all religions lie in shamanistic experiences. And all shamanistic experiences involve altered states of consciousness. So let us consider, for example, Judaism. Moses, before the burning bush, hears a voice emanating from a bush, sees the bush shimmering with light, and the bush speaks to him. Many of those who've had experiences with shamanistic plants will have had a similar experience. St. Paul on the Damascus Road in Christianity, struck down by a blinding light, completely transforms his life from then on in. This is a classic shamanistic death and rebirth with a new mission in life. The Prophet Muhammad in his cave in Arabia, isolated, alone, cold, shivering, a perfect situation to bring on an altered state of consciousness, meets a supernatural being who he construes as the angel Gabriel, who presents to him the entire text of the Quran. These were all, in my view, genuine experiences of the supernatural, which were mediated by altered states of consciousness. Unfortunately, then what happens with all the mainstream religions is that the bureaucrats and the money men step in, and within a few generations, instead of being an instrument of spiritual liberation, the religion has become an instrument of spiritual control. Instead of encouraging people to have direct spiritual experiences, they are saying, no, the priest or the mullah or the rabbi is the only one who may have these spiritual experiences and is the intermediary between us and the supernatural realm. So to cut a long story short, scratch any of the big religions down to its roots, and you are going to find a shamanistic experience of altered states of consciousness.
Right.
These experiences are present in the birth of religion, in the painted caves and the rock art that is found all around the world. There's no doubt that that was the work of shamans in altered states of consciousness. And this is the first evidence we have of any kind of religious behavior amongst our ancestors. So nobody can deny that these states of consciousness have been fundamental in the development and origins of religion. And therefore, our society, if we value religion, we should value these experiences also and realize what a crucial, massive, gigantic role they have played in the human story. And we should stop pretending otherwise.
I want to go into something I know you have a real passion about. I know a lot of your work has to do with your Orion correlation theory. Could you tell our listeners something about what you believe is the Orion correlation theory?
Okay, well, first of all, I must make absolutely clear that this is not my theory. This is the theory of a close colleague and indeed co-author of mine, and that is Robert Bovall.
Yes, that's right.
Robert Bovall is an engineer by training, and he spent much of the first half of his adult life building enormous structures all over the Middle East, as a matter of fact. But Robert one day became intrigued by the pyramids, the three pyramids of Giza. And looking at an aerial photograph, he wondered why they were laid out on the ground in such a peculiar manner. And to cut the long story again, very short, after years of research, Robert was absolutely able to establish why the pyramids are laid out in the form they are on the ground. And that's because they are designed as an image on the ground of the three stars of the belt of the constellation of Orion. Three pyramids, three stars, and the pyramids laid out on the ground in the pattern of the stars. And it turns out that the constellation of Orion isn't just any old constellation. If you wanted to argue that this astonishing visual resemblance was a coincidence, that would be a lot easier if you could say, well, look, the constellation of Orion wasn't important in ancient Egypt. But on the contrary, the constellation of Orion was the most important constellation in the sky for the ancient Egyptians.
Right.
And they regarded it as the image in the sky of their god of death and rebirth, Osiris, and that the stars represented his belt. So it's very natural that they would seek to make an image of the kingdom of Osiris in the sky on the ground, because Osiris was the lord of the dead. He governed the underworld. It was he who one had to come to terms with when making the journey, the afterlife journey that the Egyptians believed we go through, and they believed that we should be prepared for that journey. So I think what they were doing at Giza was creating a gigantic three-dimensional model of the region of the sky through which they believed their souls would travel after death.
One of my questions that I wanted to ask is also mirrored by one of the members' questions, which was by JPM1602. I'll just combine mine with that member's. Is there any hard skeletal scientific fact or remnants that giants exist? And what's with the crystal skulls that should not have been able to been made by the given tools of that time period?
As to giants, I've yet to see evidence of any real giants in the past of the human story. Of course, we only find a tiny fraction of the skeletal remains that are laid down in any epoch. But we got a pretty clear view of the evolution of human anatomy over the last 6 million years from the last common ancestor with the chimpanzee.
Right.
And I'm not aware of any gigantic human remains which are not a hoax. And I do feel quite strongly about that. The moment another turn of the spade reveals the skeleton of a giant and it proves to be genuine, I will accept it. But up till now, I haven't seen any evidence of that. Now, remind me of your second part of your question.
The member wanted to know about the crystal skulls. How could they
the
have been created?
The crystal skulls, yes. The crystal skulls, again, we have this category of out-of-place artifacts that have come down to us from prehistory, which don't fit into the picture of the technology of the past. And my argument all along has been we have to accept that we've forgotten part of the story, that there was a period of high technology in the past, which has been forgotten because a great cataclysm came and destroyed that civilization. And I think that the technology that goes to the creation of the crystal skulls is as mysterious as the technology that lies behind the pyramids of Egypt, and that both of them are likely to have their origins in a lost civilization of prehistory.
This is from member Copernicus, and he doesn't have a question. He just says, Grandma, I don't want to ask you anything. I just want to tell you that I think you're one of the bravest men who have continued to tell the truth as you see it, despite being threatened and hated by some people who are still stuck in an illusionary world. So that's just giving you a compliment that he's very...
Thank you. That's enormously, it's enormously encouraging. And it is really nice and heartening to hear that kind of comment, because it does... it can be quite difficult to be taking a line that the mainstream of academia and their friends in the media completely disagree with, and you do end up getting attacked, and it is tough. So it's nice to hear that there's that support out there.
Well, you have tons of members that are I'll give you an example. It is one of the most responded to interview things that we have put up since the inception of the ATS Mix Show.
We're glad to hear it.
Yeah, we're going into our 50th show. So you have a ton of fans, and with all the posts that were made, all the questions that were made, we definitely want to again thank the membership of AboveTopSecret.com for jumping in here. So here's my last question. Now I'm going to throw it to John for his last question with you, Grandma. We appreciate your courtesy and time with us this evening. But this is member Above Top Secret Schuler. And he wants to know, have you found any additional information
since you wrote Underworld?
I have a tendency when I've finished a book to move on. Underworld involved me in 7 years of scuba diving all around the world with my wife, Santa, who's a photographer. We put our lives on the line again and again and again. I can't tell you the number of times that we nearly died in that research, whether carried away by huge currents flowing like a river underwater, whether surfacing and finding one's boat gone. Just a huge range of problems, storms, being borne down on by a ferry and hardly able to get out of the way. I really took it as far as I could possibly take it, and I tried to put everything into the book. After I finished that book, I felt that there wasn't much more that I could add to it, and I kind of hope that others will take the research on. You know, I'm getting older now. I'm 57.
As we all are.
Yeah,
as we all are.
I am right with you, brother.
and although I still love diving, I felt I risked my life enough for that project.
Oh yeah. Right.
I hope that others will take it on.
I don't want to end this on a negative note or anything, but this is something that I feel that perhaps needs to be done. And so I want to present this to you, Graham, because you do have a lot of fans at AboveTopSecret.com and the worldwide, but there are also some of those that don't necessarily agree with your out-of-the-box thinking concepts. And so I'd like to give you the chance right now to maybe answer to those. What would you say to those that are accusing you of being part of, say, a conspiracy agenda, and that your investigative work is just part of some disinformation with the only goal to promote a new belief system? I'm going to give you this period right now to address those people.
Well, obviously, if people do have such beliefs about me, there's nothing that I can do to convince them. Basically, the way I see it, I'm a simple reporter, and I happen to have an interest in ancient mysteries, and I've taken my reporting and investigation skills as a journalist and applied them to the field of ancient mysteries. I always try to set out the facts and the evidence on which I draw my conclusions. I try to provide full transparency to the readers. I do wear my heart on my sleeve. I take risks for my stories. I put myself out there. I argue my corner. I'm always willing to accept that I might be wrong. I think that my job is to provide an alternative point of view. And I would emphasize it's a minority point of view. I am not with the mainstream on almost anything. I'm always trying to give the other side of the story. And I think there's a need in our society for giving the other side of the story, and I don't think that needs to be seen as a conspiracy. I hope in the long term it'll be seen as a useful function, and that I did something useful with all of these years of work.
Well, if it wasn't for challenges and out-of-the-box thinking, we'd still be believing that we lived on a flat world.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, many still do believe that.
And that is actually true.
I have a neighbor that still believes that.
Yes, it's really quite extraordinary, but there you are. Beliefs are very hard to change once they set in.
Well, I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been for Dave and I to have you on our show, Graham. And we want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, sir.
Thank you. It's been fun for me, too. I've really enjoyed talking to you guys. Thank you for having me on the show.
And we want to ask you, if you would, to just stay on as we close this out, and we'll do our proper goodbyes off air. So in the meantime, we want to thank once again Graham Hancock for taking time out to be on our interview with Dave and Johnny. This is the ATS Mix. I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I am Dave Rabbit. And on behalf of all the members at AboveTopSecret.com who have contributed to the great questions for Mr. Graham Hancock, we definitely appreciate all of you. So we'll see you next time on the ATS Mix. Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. When I get ready to relax after doing a long show, I enjoy going to our sister site, BelowTopSecret.com. They have some great forums there, some of which include rants, jokes, puns, and pranks, which is one of my favorites, faith and spirituality, relationships, travel and vacations. They even have a freshman forum for you newbies and rookies. I especially enjoy the music, television, fantasy, and science fiction forums, as well as comics, music, member art, and of course, video games. But my absolute all-time favorite is cool websites. And I want to tell you why. As everyone knows, I do not read. On cool websites, the membership at BelowTopSecret.com has done the work for me. They've researched the World Wide Web and found very interesting sites. All I got to do, go into the forum, click, and I am at an interesting and very cool website. So when you get through listening to that last ATS Mix show, come join me at BelowTopSecret.com, part of the Above Network LLC. Remember, deny boredom, BelowTopSecret.com.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.